Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday. It's July 15th. Currently, I've got 65 degrees in Old Town Park City and reporting 67 degrees in Heber City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, we've got a pretty nice start to the day, at least. We'll see a little bit of moisture increase, though, throughout the afternoon. So high pressure is predominantly in place. It's shifted to the east of us, which is allowing for monsoon moisture to move back into the area. So by afternoon, evening, there's about a 30% chance of some isolated showers and thunderstorms. Could see some roll into areas of Park City, like I mentioned this afternoon, with temperatures in the mid-80s. Not much change into tomorrow. Kind of a wash, rinse, and repeat throughout much of this week, in fact, with moisture still hanging on. We'll see temperatures overnight near 60, mid-80s again on Tuesday afternoon, with another risk of showers and storms in the afternoon. Less of a threat on Wednesday, but we can't say it's out of the question. Better chances, though, Thursday, Friday, another surge of monsoon moisture rotating around the ridge will bring a better chance statewide Thursday, Friday, with temperatures still in those mid-80s for daytime highs, overnight lows in the low 60s. Drier air should move in for the weekend, generating quite a bit of sunshine. Temperatures about 88 by Sunday. So, again, not much change day to day. Heber City looking at 92 today. Chance of storms in the afternoon, 92 tomorrow as well. We're going to hang out in those mid to low 90s, in fact, throughout the entire week, with a little more sunshine on Wednesday, otherwise partly cloudy skies Thursday and Friday with isolated to scattered showers and thunderstorms. Dry out for the weekend, temperatures hanging out in the mid 90s yet again for Heber as well.
Okay, Nate, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Ski Utah CEO Nathan Rafferty with the final count on skier days. Later on, Tom Kelly, the lead communications lead for the 2034 Utah Olympics and Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher, in to discuss the travel to Paris next week for the Olympics and Olympic announcements. And then Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher with an update on some of the city recreation projects that are happening. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money this morning. Today's guests include Professor Melissa Jacoby talking about her new book, Unjust Debts, a deep dive into the way the bankruptcy system in this country favors big corporations. Then Heather Ledbetter joins to discuss the latest retail outlet at the Christian Center. It's the Summit Exchange, located at the Outlets Park City. Finally, a conversation with Matt Hopkins of Cortona, now open for lunch. All of that coming up on today's edition of Mountain Money. KPCW News Time now, 8:09. Just a couple of traffic updates here. Heard from a listener, those traveling I-80 eastbound to US 40, the backup is due to people using only the right lane, not the center lane, to zipper merge. So just an unnecessary backup there in that right lane. Traffic is moving really well on 40 eastbound and old Highway 40, just some minor delays there for construction. So again, zipper merge, people, it works really well. Also had heard earlier from somebody who had noticed a bear that had been hit on Interstate 80 between Colville and Wanship, a black bear. Unfortunately, the emergency vehicle maybe have, I guess fortunately, that looks like the bear has been cleared from the road and has been removed. But it was causing apparently some slowdowns earlier this morning. Anyway, taking a look at some local news, after 14 years of negotiations, Park City acquiring some 26 acres of open space near Round Valley through a land exchange. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
The 26 acres, known as the Red Maple Parcel, is located just off State Route 248 in Quinns Junction. Park City has long wanted the land for long-term open space, but a deal to purchase it has been stalled since 2015. In June, however, the U.S. Air Force signed off on a land swap, according to a memo outlining the agreement obtained by KPCW. Decades ago, the U.S. Congress gave the land to the Air Force as compensation for a demolished ski lodge in Snow Basin that offered discount rates to active and retired military members. The deal required the Air Force to partner with a private or governmental entity for construction, as no dollars were appropriated for the project, just the land. The Air Force initially intended to build a new resort on the Red Maple property in Park City. Instead, it approached the Military Installation Development Authority, or MIDA, about developing in Wasatch County. MIDA is a state-created governmental entity with the purpose of serving active military and veterans. It creates revenue for its programs by partnering with local government entities to invest in economic development projects. MIDA's project area in Wasatch County includes the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, which will have 100 rooms available at reduced rates for service members, along with the resort's ski terrain expansion. The Red Maple property has long been a part of Park City's long-term open space plan. The municipality agreed to buy the land from MIDA back in 2015. MIDA's board approved the deal in 2020. It became official last month after the Air Force signed off on the agreement. Park City is paying MIDA $2 million for the Red Maple parcel. Resident taxpayer dollars didn't contribute to the acquisition, according to the memo. The Air Force is receiving a 1.5-acre parcel at Deer Valley East Village as part of the transaction. $1.9 million from the sale will go towards MIDA's recent purchase of 42 affordable workforce housing units in East Village. MIDA is donating the remaining $100,000 to the Boys and Girls Athletic Programs at the Wasatch County School District. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
It's 8:13. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Utah resorts posted their second best season with more than 6.7 million skier days last winter. In the studio now with details is the president and CEO of Ski Utah, Nathan Rafferty. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So how are you summing up this past winter then?
Well, first, let me say it's tough to talk about skiing with the weather we've got outside, but we'll do it anyway. You know, it was a great ski season. Our second best ever, and off to a little bit of a slow start snow-wise, and then really kicked in, and we had strong end of January, February, March, so, you know, logged a bunch of great powder days, and that helped us get to 6.75 million, our second best ever. But, you know, we kind of consider the previous season a bit of a unicorn with 903 inches of snow.
Yeah, so I was going to note, yeah, it did feel like a kind of a slow start to the season. Did that reflect those on the skier days, or did they get, did they start to come when the snow fell?
You know, I think we would have had obviously more skier days had we been able to start as early as we did the year previous. But, you know, the change for us was that people could actually get to the slopes, especially in places like Little Cottonwood Canyon that missed out on, I think, 15 full days of severely impacted, you know, and around here in Park City, too. I mean, it was just tough to get around.
Yeah. And, of course, that record snowfall the winter of 2022-23 was no surprise that that did set the record, even though it was a challenge to get from here to there. But we also skied until July 4th.
I know. And, you know, I think we found that happy medium. And we were above average snowfall last year, 600 and something inches. So that was just a really nice tweener where we didn't have things collapsing and spend all sorts of time and money removing snow off everything we could find.
Yeah, so in terms of the number of skier visits, what was the record set?
The record was 7.1 million. And that was, yeah, like I said, 2 years ago, and with that 903 inches of snow.
All right. So what do we know about those that are coming to ski and ride in Utah resorts?
Yeah, it hasn't changed dramatically, although we have seen just this last year an uptick in local visits. When we do research every year, if you're a member of Ski Utah, you get really in-depth information about who's coming, when they're coming, how much they're spending. And that's one thing, not a whole lot has changed, but one thing we have seen a change is more local skiers. And I think a lot of that has, well, there are two reasons. A lot of people are moving here to Utah because of the great recreational opportunities, and then the sale of these big multi-area passes. If you've got a pass in your pocket that's good for multiple ski areas, you're going to ski a ton.
Yeah. And how many resorts are not having the RFID, you know, that way to actually track real numbers of technology?
Not very many. I can't even think of maybe one or two, but they're still pretty good at tracking numbers. But, you know, when we move to RFID and digital, boy, we get really specific and know how many people ski and when they ski.
Yeah. So are they still coming from the same old places, California, New York, Texas?
Yep. California and New York are our biggest markets, and we think of New York as not just New York State, but that whole New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, and then Southern California. I don't know that there have been. Texas has inched up over the last few years, and in the last decade, actually, since the big multi-area passive come online, Denver never was on our radar. And we see, an increasing number of green license plates showing up in our state, skiing real snow and having a good time. So we're happy to see them, and, they get to spread their wings a little bit.
Yeah, and in looking forward, I mean, we know that we can handle 7.1 million skiers, albeit, we also heard of, 4-hour traffic jams coming down Little Cottonwood Canyon. I mean, really, realistically, how many more skier visits can we add?
Yeah, it was nice to see kind of the high water mark, and that 7.1 million happened with really some compromised infrastructure too. Our parking lots shrink. We can't, the number of available parking spaces gets reduced dramatically because there's snow sitting on all of them. So, I felt like last year was really, it was busy, but quite reasonable. And there was a ton of snow, but not too much snow. So, and as we see infrastructure upgrades continue too, so we've got something like 14 chairlifts coming in over the next 2 years, a whole bunch at Deer Valley, and Park City's putting one in this summer. So Snowbird, Powder Mountain's got four, and so those increase the capacity internally at the ski areas. So once you get there, moves people around a lot more efficiently, and the ski area feels less crowded. So that's a good thing. And then we just need to continue to work on infrastructure. And a big part of our job at Ski Utah is educating the general public as to why they should carpool, why they should take public transportation, and how much better the experience is for everybody when we all do that.
Yeah. So the lifts that you're seeing being built or at the base then to get people up onto different parts of the mountain?
Not necessarily. In some cases, sure, like at Park City, the new gondola over there. But at Powder Mountain, not necessarily. They're lifts at their parking lots at the top. So, when you increase that capacity at the ski area, you can just kind of keep more people in the air and circulating better, and less people waiting for the chairlift at the bottom. So a lot of these are moving from fixed grip chairs to high capacity chairs.
So what's the latest on the gondola? That's supposed to go up Little Cottonwood Canyon.
Yeah, I think it's in. And just kind of wading through a handful of lawsuits, which was anticipated. And, year in and year out, we continue to see the need for that. And even with lower snowfall numbers this year, still saw plenty of traffic in Little Cottonwood Canyon. And I think that would go a long way to helping things over there.
Yeah. And I guess while we wait for the lawsuit to make it through the courts, why not just try out it? Bus plan and see how that works.
Yeah, and I think the bus folks are making strides and improvements. The bus service in Little Cottonwood Canyon decreased pretty dramatically over the last couple years due to a shortage of drivers. And I know it's been a focus of UTA to get more drivers and more capacity there. So every little bit's going to help.
All right. And then in terms of what Ski Utah does during the summer months, you've got what marketing dollars to spend that
sure.
Actually, I think you received less dollars than you have in the past, huh?
And that, our budget, Ski Utah's budget, has actually gone up a little bit, and we're funded primarily by the ski areas. It's the state's budget that has gone down just a hair. They had, I'm going to get this number wrong, I think $23.8 million last year, and this year it's $22.8, so it was $1 million less. But we work very closely with the Utah Office of Tourism, and they're great partners. They obviously support skiing tourism, but also national parks, state parks, and everything in between. So they've been great partners, and we both kind of fly really high and talk about the access and snow, and we let our resort partners really get into the nitty-gritty of why people should come to their specific resort, whether it's different pass products or different terrain offerings or whatever that is. And so we kind of do that high flying.
Yeah, so any change up in the kind of marketing that Ski Utah does?
Not really. You know, there's again, the messaging is very similar, but I would say the channels we use, and there are always tweaks when you're buying digital these days, and much less print, if any. You know, there are new activations and just new ways to spend our money digitally, and we continue to try to refine that. And in the digital space, that's what is great, is you can A-B test all these things on the fly and understand what imagery works, what messaging's working, and make those changes day by day.
Yeah. And you used to head back to, like, New York. It was a big kind of ski powwow.
Yeah.
Is that, does that still happen then?
It still happens for sure. So we go back and we bring all our resorts with us, and we go meet with media in New York City, travel writers and now bloggers and influencers, and just kind of tell them what's going on with the ski season and continue to foster great relationships.
Okay. So I understand you are one of those that is headed to Paris next week for the 2034 Olympics?
Yeah, super excited. A week from today, is that right? Go back and be part of the IOC meeting, which will hopefully, fingers crossed, award the games to Salt Lake City in 2034.
Yeah, so what's your role?
My role is to be there and support and have a voice of the ski industry there. You know, there are so many various entities that are there, and you know, we're the voice of the industry here in Utah, including the three venues, Snow Basin, Park City, Deer Valley, and work closely with all those guys.
Okay, so not necessarily a speaking role, but just a kind of a networking, marketing role?
Exactly. Not certainly not a speaking role, but they're networking and also learning. I think it's really important. You know, we're only going to have so many opportunities to understand how future Olympic host cities continue to maintain tourism during that Olympic year. And we saw a huge drop here in 2002. Now, 2034 is a, you know, the landscape is just totally different. Our city's changed, our state has changed so much, but it's something that we're very focused on, is making sure that that's still going to be a successful season. It's really easy to think, sit at your kitchen table in New York City and say, hey, we're going to take a year off of Utah and go somewhere else because it's got to all be under construction, or the Olympics are going to be a big hassle. And we want to make sure that they know that there's plenty of skiing and great opportunities to be had here during that ski season.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that's it. Working towards a great ski season coming up, and we're going to blink, and it's going to be here.
Okay. Nathan, thanks.
Thank you.
Nathan Rafferty is the president and CEO of Ski Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:25. It's 8:26 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as part of the Park City delegation headed to Paris for the announcement of the awarding of the 2034 Olympic Winter Games, I'm joined in the studio now by U Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher, along with Tom Kelly, who serves as the 2034 Salt Lake Olympics Communications Lead. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with you, Emily, and just maybe, I mean, why is it important that you're there in Paris next week?
Well, thank you so much for that question. It was an exciting time this spring when the International Olympic Committee came for one of their last site visits, and we had the opportunity to talk to the IOC about what we do here in Park City as the Youth Sports Alliance. We were founded out of the 2002 Games, and it's just a great legacy to the Games and what can happen, not just for the period of time and the competitions that happen during the Olympics, but the legacy it can leave for a community. And to be able to showcase that for the International Olympic Committee and the Bid Committee was really something special. And so after that, Catherine Rainey Norman, who's the chair of the Bid Committee, reached out and said, you know, we really love what's happening at the Youth Sports Alliance. We really love to have some of your athletes and have you accompany us for the bid to sort of share this message about what an Olympic Games can do for a community, not just for those 17 days of the Games, but for a legacy going forward.
All right. And I understand that you've got a couple of youth as part of the Youth Sports Alliance traveling with you?
Yeah, so we have three athletes. One is from the Oval and two are from Park City. So Orson Colby, he's 18. He's part of the Wasatch Luge Club. He discovered luge while he was working on a Boy Scout merit badge. But he's part of that legacy of the 2002 games. He trains with the Wasatch Luge Club that we support through Jan's Winter Welcome, and we have supported him with scholarships from the Stein Erickson Endowment. He competed just this last year at the Youth Olympic Games and the Junior World Championships. So excited to have Orson with us. And in addition to that, we have Kate Presgrove. She's 16. She's a member of the Figure Skating Club of Park City. She is a really special young athlete here in the community. She works incredibly hard. And she has also been a recipient of the Stein Erickson Endowment Scholarships from the Youth Sports Alliance for years. So exciting to just have those athletes coming with us.
Yeah, and I guess why is it important that they're there?
Yeah, so I think it's really important because they are the living example of that legacy from the 2002 games. We have these amazing Olympic facilities, and the Youth Sports Alliance has been able to facilitate getting lots of youth out active using these Olympic venues. And really, it shows what an Olympics can do for a community and how we've been able to get them out and active. And they can speak to the IOC, to the people in Paris, to the people of the world, what it sport can do for them personally and for a community.
Yeah, and certainly at 16 and 18, my guess is that they're going to be too old to compete in 2034, but certainly they have their sights set on 2026 and
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you know, for luge is definitely one of those sports where you peak later in life. So I think Orson is definitely looking at his hometown track and hopefully competing here in Salt Lake.
All right, let's have a conversation with you, Tom, here. Maybe you can just explain. We've got a huge delegation, it feels like, headed over to Paris. I mean, why do we need so many people there?
Well, it's a great opportunity for everybody in the state, and there's a lot of different interests in the state, and a lot of people have chosen to go over to this event. In addition to that, we're also taking a donor group over. We're entirely privately funded, and we will fund the games in 2034 entirely from private sources. So we are taking a very large donor group over as well, and these are the people who have helped to support the bid. The bid cost was $4 million, which is actually, as far as bid goes, is probably one of the lowest ever. To have bid and hopefully successfully achieved the games. So there's a lot of different interests. But I think to go back to the points that Emily was making, when we bid for 2002 and we conducted those games, it was a matter of building this infrastructure, building these venues, training officials, training volunteers, and really building the things necessary to hold competitions like that. This will be probably the most sustainable games ever in terms of no new permanent venues needing to be constructed. We have all the venues, and not only do we have the venues, but we have the officials, we have the volunteers, we have the knowledge base that we just didn't have going into 2002. So we've really wanted to focus on other things as kind of our prime direction. We'll organize the games. That'll come in a few years from now. But right now we want to get the message out of how sport can bring communities together. And that's a message we want to extend across our country, but also across the world, and set an example for other bid cities in the future that, hey, this is what you can do with the games. It's not just the 17 days of great events. It's what you can do in perpetuity. So the legacy that came out of the 2002 games is a living legacy now, and it will just continue on. And with the games confirmation, hopefully on July 24th, we'll move forward, and that'll be a big focus for us.
Yeah. So what happens while you're there in Paris?
We have a lot of different engagements. Of course, the election day is the pivotal one, and that'll come on July 24th. That's Pioneer Day here in Utah. So if you want to watch it live, you can. You can watch it on YouTube, or you can go down to Salt Lake City and join the celebration. Slight change in our schedule that day. It now will be live at 2:30 a.m., 2:30 a.m. in Utah time, and that will be our presentation. The election will take place approximately an hour later at 3:30 a.m. Utah time, and the decision will be rendered immediately after that. We are doing a live watch party down at the City County Building in Washington Square in Salt Lake City. We will have live images from Paris, both the feed from the Congress Hall as well as KSL's other camera crews out and about in Paris. So it should be a fun time. Food trucks and other activities. So if you want to kind kind of have a little pajama party, come on down to Washington Square at 2:30.
So it's really mostly ceremonial. There is no other city out there bidding, is there?
We are the preferred host, but I won't say that anything's automatic. We have to go in there and do a good job in the presentation, and we've put together what we feel is an extraordinary presentation to the IOC, and hopefully the IOC will vote in support of us.
Yeah, who are we up against?
We're not up against anybody. It's a choice of do they want to award the games to Salt Lake City or not. So there's not another site. And that takes a bit of the suspense out of it. But what it has brought is, first of all, a much lower cost bid than we've ever seen before. But the biggest part is the ongoing dialogue that we have. It's not a contest. It's a business discussion with the IOC. So we're on with the IOC virtually every day, talking about the games and what we want to do. We're getting feedback from them. So it's the type of exchange that we've never seen before. And I think it will ultimately result in a much better product and at a lot less expense.
Yeah, so is that, I mean, we're kind of always going to be one of those Olympic cities just because it does it make sense to continue to build and build and build for 17 days?
Well, I think in our case, you know, we're probably the perfect example of we took the 17 days of the Olympic Games, plus, of course, the Paralympics in 2002, and we parlayed that into really a culture of sport. So it's not just about gold medal athletes, although we have a lot of them here in Park City. It's about the kids on the street and the opportunities that they have in programs like Youth Sports Alliance now. And this is, we look at what's going on in Park City and Summit County as a real model for what other communities can do across the Wasatch, across the state, and actually across the world.
So you mentioned we've got the live watch happening in Washington Square in Salt Lake City. Are there other celebrations happening across the state?
Yeah, there's one at a little bit more civil time up here in Park City starting at 4 o'clock at the Utah Olympic Park. They have a fabulous program going that's very specific to the celebration of 2034. So there'll be athlete autographs, a Flying Ace All-Star show. There's also Pioneer Day celebrations where it's being tagged on, like down in Charleston in the Heber Valley. And also Provo's doing a activity in the evening at 6 o'clock, free skating, photos with the Zamboni. And that all happened right in front of the Peaks Arena.
Okay. How many Olympics have you been part of, summer and winter?
So this will be number 11 for me. This will be 2 summer and 9 winter.
Wow. So you're kind of like an expert on this. IOC should be talking to you.
I talk to them frequently, actually. It's great. But no, I'm happy doing what I'm doing, and this is going to be an exciting time and just thrilled to have. I think for me, you know, from having worked with the elite athletes for so many years, that's been great. Great life experience. But what really gets me pumped up right now is working with the kids and providing them opportunities to have those 3 athletes that Emily talked about down at our Paris Preview media event last Tuesday. And we have another group that's going over. There's a group of 6 athletes, which are all donor-supported, going over as a part of what's called Festival 24. There'll be over 500 kids from around the world, 37 countries, 64 programs. And to talk to those kids and see how excited they are and to see how sport is a part of the fabric of their lives, that's what really gets me excited, and that's why I'm such a supporter of Youth Sports Alliance, because we have that right here in our community.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the partnership, Emily, that you've got with the Sports Don LaVille. This is something similar in Paris?
Yeah, so there's a nonprofit in Paris that's similar to the Youth Sports Alliance, Sport Don LaVille. And we are hoping to create a long-term partnership with them between the Salt Lake City, Utah 2034 bid committee and Sport Don LaVille. We're going to announce that partnership in Paris and sort of spend some time talking about best practices and how you can get youth involved in sport and what they have been able to accomplish and share what we've been able to accomplish. And it's going to be a really special time to talk about that, not just in our community, in our state, in our country, but really globally.
Yeah. What else do you have to do while you're there?
Well, it is a pretty packed agenda, I will say that, but super excited just to be part of this whole thing. I moved to Park City in 1998, working for the U.S. ski team. I thought I would be here through the 2002 games, but still here, still involved in sport. still involved in getting youth involved in sport. And so to be able to be there and be in the room when they announced that 2034 is going to be super exciting. Some other meet and greets, some other things with athletes. I know the three youth athletes, they all mentioned that they really want to see the Eiffel Tower in person. So I think we'll probably take a trip there, see the Olympic rings, and take some pictures there.
Awesome. All right. Let's talk about a few other things from U Sports Alliance. You've got tickets on sale for Jan's Winter Welcome going fast.
Yeah. So we just opened ticket sales for Jan's Winter Welcome. It's the 44th annual. And that will be Saturday, October 26th at Stein Erickson Lodge. Excited to partner with them again this year. You can go to ysausa.org to find that ticket information. And then the opportunity drawing package this year is a trip to Belize. It's a week stay in a brand new 5-bedroom, 6-bathroom oceanfront house with a pool. It's an incredible property. You could use this house for so many different things. And that's the opportunity drawing is really one of my favorite ways to support youth sports in town, because you can pick what club you want to support with that opportunity drawing ticket. And the whole $50 goes back to that club at 100%. So you can check that out on our website.
Okay. And then you also have opened registration for upcoming scholarships?
Yeah, so this is another important time. If you have an athlete that's training with one of our 7 winter sport clubs, you can apply for need-based scholarships through the Stein Erickson Endowment. So if there's any athletes or parents out there thinking about signing up for a winter program and wondering if they can afford it, please, please check out that scholarship information. Again, it's just at ysausa.org. The scholarship application window for those need-based training scholarships is from August 1st to August 31st, and that's for your annual cost. So please check that out. We always want to make sure that any families that are facing challenges keeping their children in one of those winter sport clubs are encouraged to apply.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Tom?
Nope. Just fingers crossed.
Okay. Tom and Emily, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 840. KPCW News Time now, 840. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now in studio is Ken Fisher. He is the Director of Park City Recreation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. So first off, let's start with this newly formed Youth Recreation Advisory Board. It's meeting for the first time this week. Maybe start by telling us what it is and what it is that why it was started.
Yeah, so the Recreation Advisory Board had an interest in coming up with a way to try to engage the youth in the community to come up with programming. We struggle with coming up with recreational programs that middle school, high schoolers will participate in. So really, this was a way to reach out to them, try to put a group together that would really help to brainstorm ideas, potentially organize events, and engage with their peers to come up with activities that hopefully they'll participate in.
Yeah, so how many members do you have and how are they selected?
Yeah, so there was an application that they filled out online. We interviewed the applicants, and out of that we selected 8 members. And they represent the schools of Treasure Mountain Middle School, Park City High School, Roland Hall, and Silver Summit Academy. So we have a good mix.
Yeah, so certainly, I mean, kids from outside the city limits, why was it important to include them as well?
Well, I think, as you know, our population, a lot of the kids live outside of the city limits. I think about 70% of the kids in the school district are outside of the 84060. And we really take, again, this regional approach to recreation. And if we really just focused on, I think, the Park City kids, we would struggle to get enough participation. So with a lot of our programs, we rely on that outside population in order to put together quality programming.
Yeah, so do you have kind of a line item in the budget then, specifically for older youth recreation?
We don't. I mean, we have, you know, line items for different activities, but if it became any of the activities that we started became a budget impact, then we would come back through the budget process and ask for additional funding. But at this point, we're not concerned about that.
Okay, so this is like a, I mean, they have agendas and public meeting notices and all of that, or is it a little bit
less formal. It will not be public meetings. We will, I'm sure, keep minutes, but it's not noticed or anything like that.
Okay, and the first meeting is on Tuesday. What's on the agenda? Any idea?
I think really, since it's the first meeting, it's an opportunity for them to get to know one another. We'll do some icebreaker games, and I think probably begin the discussion of potential activities or things that they would like to pursue.
All right. Do you hope to, have some kind of list of priorities and then they disband, or is that going to be a monthly
meeting? No, it's a monthly meeting, so hopefully this will continue on. It would be great if it had continued on for years, but we'll see how it goes and what kind of input we get.
All right. Let's see. You've been busy with some summer capital projects. Tell us, what do those include?
Okay. Well, we got new shade installed at Prospector Park. We put a piece of shade over the end of that new playground equipment over the slide to keep that cool. So that got installed a couple of weeks ago. And I've been by there a couple times, and it seems like the community's really loving those improvements and a lot of people out there. So that's great. We start actually today a court resurfacing project at the PC Mark, where we are resurfacing all the outdoor and indoor tennis and pickleball courts.
Okay, so what does that entail?
It is a glorified paint job, I'll call it, right, where the courts haven't been resurfaced since we've opened that facility. And as the play is on there, the grid of the tennis courts or the pickleball courts wears off. So it's really a resurfacing of those facilities. It will be a huge improvement and for the racket sports community.
Okay. It's not shutting everything down. You're just doing sections at a time?
Yeah, we'll do it phases. So those familiar with the facility, we sort of have banks of courts, so we'll do two tennis courts, two pickleball courts at one time, then we'll move to the three courts that are under the bubble. Those will get done, and then the other bank of two tennis courts, two pickleball courts, and then the last phase will be indoors.
All right. What about the new aquatics facility? Is that going to get started this year?
Boy, we're certainly hoping, and we're pushing for that to start this fall. One of the things, we've had a lot of public input, which has been fantastic. A lot of the lap swimmers were wondering about whether it's an opportunity to expand the lap pool from 6 to 8 lanes. And again, working with the architect, we think we can squeeze a 8-lane, 25-yard pool in there, which will be a big improvement for the community. So we are pricing that out now in the hopes that our budget would be able to cover that.
Yeah, every time I walk by, lanes are full.
Yeah, right. I mean, lap swimming is a great activity for all ages, and it's certainly popular. And if we can build a pool, right, we need to, as we build these facilities, not just meet today's needs, but also think about the future.
Yeah, lap pool was closed yesterday, I saw a notice. What work were you doing there?
Yeah, we had, the water had been cloudy. So we, I think they backwashed it and just trying to stay on top of that. The maintenance side.
Okay. Let's see. What's the newest with the community center, formerly known as the kind of the City Park Rec building?
Yeah, so that project's moving forward. We City Council approved a contract amendment with Sprano Mooney a few weeks ago that will take that project through construction. We are just beginning the planning process, engaging the Planning Commission. We'll be going to them in September to preview that project, see what kind of issues they have. But hopefully we can get through the planning process and start that project a year from this August.
Okay. And where do those popular basketball and volleyball courts get moved to?
So they pretty much stay in the same general vicinity. One change will be our volleyball courts sort of face east-west, which isn't the best for evening play. So those will be shifted to be north-south. And then the basketball court will stay in the same general area. It does expand a little bit on the width. And again, through the public output process, we've met with some basketball players that play out there quite a bit. And they were talking about, hey, should we make the court longer or whatnot? And again, through that communication, they said the length is actually pretty good, but if we could get a little additional width, that would really be great. So that's, I think we got an extra 6 feet of width on that court.
So it's not regulation length, or is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
But again, very popular, always being used, it seems like. Yeah,
yeah, right. I mean, we're obviously a fortunate community where a lot of people prioritize recreation and they're out using these facilities.
Okay. And then you're also working there on the Creekside Bike Park. This is near the Park Meadows Fire Station.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. We've had, originally it was a dirt jump park that was built many years ago. And over the years, it's been improved. And this is really just the next reiteration of that facility as technology improves. It's really now going to be more of a, we'll call it a bike park than just a dirt jump park, because there will be some skills, amenities, and all that in there.
Something like we might see at the Trailside Bike Park?
Not to that extent. I mean, it is certainly some jumps, pump track, and then some, I'll just call them sort of skill features.
Okay.
That people can use.
And that'll get done this year?
It will. That should be open to the public here by the end of the month.
All right. And then tell me a little bit more about this public-private partnership for a new pickleball facility.
Yeah, we put out an RFP to solicit proposals to build an indoor pickleball facility out at Quinn's. And that site is located between the ice arena and the U.S. Ski Team building. The city owns a 15-acre lot there. Really, the main part of that lot is between the two facilities. It's about 7 acres there. So we put proposals out. We received three submittals from companies, and we're in the process of going through and scoring those. And we'll move, well, we'll see once we score those and how many we move on to the interview process.
All right. Now, the city decided to go this route after the bond didn't pass last November, just to do a public-private facility, so it's not all city dollars, just you're providing the land?
Yeah, correct. I mean, I think the goal of the city, or one of the ideas, is can we get a facility built by using city land, but we're not putting additional tax dollars into it. And there was, you know, as part of that proposal, they... the submittals had to ask, you know, what kind of city resources do they need? So we'll see what additional resources the city may or may not put into a facility.
So we're talking indoor?
Indoor, right. That's really where the demand is.
And how many courts?
That was, again, up to the submittals. I think all of them had 12 indoor courts.
Okay, and that's just space.
Yeah.
Basically what they've got. Yep. Okay, when do you expect to have a decision on that?
Oh, boy, we hope to get that back to City Council this early fall. And depending on their decision, right, we'll just keep moving forward. These things are not quick to get done. So.
And how would that work? People would walk in if they had a, do they need a MARC membership or anything like that to participate?
Right, I would say all that's to be determined. One of the criteria is that it could not be a private facility. So I imagine it would operate similar to the MARC, where they could sell monthly passes, and or anybody, member of the public, could show up and reserve a court time and be able to play.
Yeah, and is the plan that city staff would be staffing that facility?
No, we're actually looking through these, at this point, those proposals. They own and operate that facility. Again, it's sort of hands off from the operational side at this point.
All right. And then they would have the say in how much it costs to play, huh?
Yeah. And again, I think, again, we put in there that those fees need to potentially be approved by the city.
All right. And what's the plan then for the outdoor courts this winter with the bubble? Are you replacing that, or what's the next?
Yeah, so we have a new bubble. As you know, it came down on March 1st last year. So we have a new bubble that will be going up the middle of September. And it's, you know, new bubble, new lights, new doors. The courts are starting to be resurfaced. So it'll be, you know, again, a great facility. We, again, will be dividing time up between tennis and pickleball. And we've had a court allocation subcommittee that's been working on that, which is a mix of tennis players, pickleball players, RAB members, city council member, with the hopes that we can finalize a plan so that we can get rid of or hopefully end some of the discourse that has happened over the past couple of years.
Yeah, what was the final insurance decision on that? Did insurance pay?
Oh, yeah. It will be about $500,000 insurance claim where insurance minus our deductible covered all the replacement costs, and then they also covered lost revenue from that bubble being down.
Okay, and I was going to note, because I was going to take it, the transit to trail shuttle was canceled this week, and I think apparently no insurance had been secured. Is that something you guys handle, or?
Yeah, I'm not aware of that.
Okay, anything else you want to add?
That's it. Thanks for having me in, and happy summer.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Ken Fisher is the director of Park City Recreation. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time, 8:54. Well, the Deer Creek Reservoirs Dam is undergoing about $100 million in underwater repairs. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports construction resumes this summer.
About 1.5 million people, or half of Utah's population, rely on Deer Creek to supply water. But aging infrastructure means it's increasingly difficult to keep the dam in good working order. It's more than 80 years old, and engineers say several concerns with the design need to be addressed. Utah is in the middle of a major project to restore the dam. Brad Jorgensen of the Provo River Water Users Association told the Wasatch County Council what's next for the project Wednesday. He says the dam's guard gates are a major part of the system in need of replacement. Guard gates help manage water levels in the reservoir and control water flow. They're especially important to reduce flood risks. Jorgensen says the project designer has come up with a way to do this key phase of work underwater.
The original proposal was identifying that we needed to drain the reservoir, and that has all sorts of issues with it. It's not an easy task to be able to fill up again. So we were very interested in having this opportunity to be able to do this work in the wet.
The project involves creating a new route to carry water from the reservoir to the power plant on the other side of the dam. A special microtunnel boring machine will drill a tunnel from dry land into the reservoir. Crews will divert water into the new bypass system so they can do maintenance work on the guard gates. Construction divers then head underwater to finish the tunnel construction and do rehabilitation work on the gates.
They've got a fishbowl basically on their head. There's a video on top of their helmet that shows what they're doing. Everything's hooked up with GPS so they know where they're at.
The divers are accompanied by a remote operated vehicle to help with their work. And Jorgensen says the depth of the water adds to the challenge.
Yeah. So each diver can only do about 30 minutes at those depths. And so one goes in, the other one's been watching what they've been doing. He comes out, goes into the decompression chamber, next one's in. And so it's a process.
Work on the project began in 2023. Jorgensen says the new tunnel is almost complete. Divers are slated to return to the construction site this summer. The guard gates will be refurbished in late 2025, and completion is scheduled for March 2026. In total, the project will cost about $100 million. More information about the Deer Creek project is available on the Provo River Water Users Association website. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And pools, a climbing wall, and indoor courts are included in Basin Recreation's plan for a new field house at Silver Creek Village. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the question now is whether Snyderville Basin residents want to fund those facilities.
Basin Rec has narrowed plans for new fields and facilities near the junction of I-80 and US 40. After surveying residents, the district owns about 100 acres there. Their plans include a new field house, which could relieve pressure on the popular recreation center at Kimball Junction. Taxpayer surveys have shown demand for more aquatics and climbing facilities. Both are included in the new field house concept, plus indoor sports courts. Outdoor fields would be on the other end of the property. Trails would run between the two through a wetland restoration area. District Superintendent Matt Wagner told the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission on July 9th that the plans are far from final.
But we did want to get the design to a phase that we could show to the public they might be voting for in a bond.
That's because Basin Rec may need to issue a multi-million dollar bond to pay for the new facilities. Planning commissioners say pools in particular are expensive, but most agree they're needed. Voters would need to approve a bond, which would be paid for with property taxes. Basin Rec surveyed area residents in 2023, and they were split on whether to bond this year. Releasing more concrete plans might help voters decide, says Basin Rec Board President Brandy Connolly.
So what the board had asked the strategic planning consultants to do on this project was to do public engagement with, you know, buildings where people can come and talk, to do small focus groups, stakeholder interviews, all sorts of different things, and then build something and ask the public, is this what you want, and would you be willing to pay for it?
The July 9th Planning Commission presentation was preliminary, and the bond isn't on November's ballot yet. Early renderings of the field house and surrounding facilities are at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
It's 8:59. Good morning. Well, as wildfire danger increases across the state, Park City is prohibiting fireworks and open flames in the city. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
The Park City Council unanimously approved a resolution Thursday that bans fireworks and open flames within city limits. The restrictions are in effect through November. The Summit County Fire Warden increased wildfire danger in the area to very high, the second highest warning level. Park City Council member Jeremy Rubel said it's important for residents to follow the rules.
We're at a very high fire danger, and it's very important. These things go bad quickly, so we love everyone's participation and support of the ban. And if you do see open flames or whatnot, please report it.
The ban approved Thursday does not apply to permitted fire pits, gas stoves, or charcoal barbecue grills. Residents can apply for a fire operational permit through the city's building department. Those would be the only exceptions allowed. A map showing area fire restrictions is available at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.